This is Karen Lyle with Latitude 38's Max Ebb on Sailsport Talk. Let's eavesdrop on a conversation between Max Ebb and Lee Helm on Sailing Science.
I ran aground a few weeks ago, taking my usual shortcut into the marina. Right in view of the yacht club, too. I was mortified.
Max, there's like a little book you can get at the marina office?
Yes, I know how to read the tide book, but this tide was exceptionally low during a full moon. What I don't understand is why, with the sun and moon pulling from opposite sides of the Earth, we get extra strong tides. Shouldn't the gravity from the sun partially cancel out the gravity from the moon? Yet we get spring tides on the new moon and on the full moon.
That's because it's the gravity gradient, not the gravitation per se.
And also, why do we get two highs and two lows every day? If it's the moon's gravity pulling on the water, you'd think there'd be just one high tide each day, always on the side of the Earth closest to the moon.
Well, it's the same answer. It's the gravity gradient. The change in gravity from one side of the Earth to the other. In a uniform gravity field, there'd be no tides. Earth and water would, like, both feel exactly the same pull.
You'll have to explain this gradient thing.
Okay, for sure. So first, remember that gravitational force drops off with the inverse square of distance. For example, if you have a gravitational attraction from a large object like the moon, and then you double your distance away from the moon, you'll only have one quarter the gravitational force. Easy high school level proof based on a symmetrical Gaussian surface integral. Look it up. But we don't need to get into that right now.
Okay, inverse square is easy enough. I remember that.
Well, now let's work this out with some numbers. So we all know the moon is about 250,000 miles away. The Earth has a radius of about 4,000 miles. The moon is pulling, wait for it, 3.3% harder on the ocean on the side of the Earth near the moon than it's pulling on the center of the Earth.
Right. So there's a high tide under the moon. Makes perfect sense. Doesn't answer my question.
Okay, so now look at the side of the Earth away from the moon. The moon is pulling by 3.3% less on the far side water than on the Earth itself. We're left with water on the near side being pulled towards the moon, away from the Earth, and on the far side, it's like the Earth being pulled away from the water.
So it's like the Earth and the water around it are being stretched out with high water on each side?
Exactly.
But still, shouldn't the moon and sun cancel each other out, at least partly, when they're on opposite sides of the Earth?
Well, that's the cool part. So, okay, the gravity forces are opposite, but the gravity gradient end up being in the same direction.
So it's like two negatives making a positive. Both bodies, even though they're on opposite sides of the Earth, tend to stretch out the Earth and the water on it along the same line.
Good. So, trick question. In English, do two positives make a negative?
No, they don't. Especially not in English. It's just like in math. A double positive is still a positive.
Yeah, right.
Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast, around the world on AFN. Hey, it's Tuesday, and what we do in the first hour on Tuesdays is we check in with the co-host of this segment from SailSportTalk.com. How many nationally syndicated radio shows talk sailing? Well, this one does on Tuesdays in the first hour, and it is with Karen Lyle, who joins me as she does basically for the last 9 months, as I do, in the East Bay in our homes. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing great. It's raining outside. Looks like London. We've got like all this misty. Yeah, it's not sailing weather.
You know what? Where I am, it is bright blue skies.
Really? I think we're only a few miles away from each other. See, now,
Wait, is this a rerun?
If we had not been in a pandemic, we would be seeing each other every week over in San Francisco in the Sports Byline broadcast studio. Yes.
No, I know. That's the one thing about, I mean, I don't miss the commute, obviously, which I've been working in downtown San Francisco since 1989. I don't miss the commute. But yeah, I miss that and the comedians coming through and, you know, that type of stuff is good. So as we look back, first of all, Happy New Year, Karen.
Happy New Year to you and to all our listeners.
Yes. You today, I know you wanted to sort of look back on 2020 and think about some of the topics and people we got to know.
Yes. And actually, I was looking over the list of guests we've had. This is our 92nd show, Rick. And when we started out in the first part of January, we were interviewing Paul Kayard with the Bay Area Sports Hall of Fame because he had won, he'd been placed in the class of 2020, and there was plans for all kinds of celebrations because he was the first sailor to be recognized in alongside of the other sports of that class. And I had to watch as everything got canceled, and so did you.
Because a guy had to eat a bat. I know. It's affected the whole world. When you emailed me to think about 2020, there's three guests that we had a lot of good guests. And we've, of course, had a lot of discussions with our friend Christopher Kane, our America's Cup expert as well. But the three that popped up, first and foremost, head and shoulders above everyone, and I think we had him on three times, was Sir Robin Knox Johnston. That guy is a man's man.
He's really been a wonderful friend, actually. I think that if it hadn't been for the pandemic, I don't know that we would have had the leisure to chat and become acquainted, but we talked on so many occasions, and he came on the show at least three times. And he's been a great support behind the scenes. He introduced me to Sir Keith Mills, who was the one who was having Vivica rebuilt, and we interviewed him as well.
Mm-hmm. But you think about a guy who, because I always think about going to sea and the glory of it and the fascination of it and the exploration. But then again, one of human beings' deepest fears is deep water. And so for someone to get beyond that, just you personally, how are you able to get beyond the deep water fear? Was it just something that you just kind of put out of your mind and figure, hey, if I go in, I'll just get back on the boat. It's not a big deal.
Well, I swim, and I have. I remember when I first started to swim. I was 15, and before I started to swim, everybody would laugh at me because if you put me in a pool, I look like a dog paddling. I just didn't have any ability, and I learned how to swim at the age of 15, and went onto a swim team, and kind of. I think that. I mean, even though if you're in the water and it's cold or you're in the ocean, the swimming is not, it's helpful, but it's really that life jacket that keeps you going until, or lifeboat or whatever it is. I think that if you've spent time in the water, maybe you're not so afraid of it because you know that you can manage it. It doesn't really bother me, but I'm conscious on an intellectual level of the danger.
Okay, looking back on the SailSportTalk.com statement, by the way, Rick Tittle with Karen Lyle, you're going to have to help me. I don't have that list in front of me. You're going to have to help me with his name. But who was the guy we had who was a British admiral who also served for a year as a guest in the United States Navy? Because I found that guy very fascinating.
Yes, so that was Vice Admiral John McAnally of the Royal Navy. And it turns out that he and Sir Robin Knox Johnston are buddies, and that they were in the Merchant Marines at the same time when they were younger, and had stories to tell, related to that. And so it was, but I didn't meet John McAnally through Sir Robin. It was just a coincidence that I found out that they knew each other and lived close together. So, but John is. He's a great guy. I really enjoyed hearing the perspective on the other side of the pond.
No, it's great stuff. And for you, when you were over there on the Thames and those Royal Yacht Clubs, you did a lot of pretty good networking there, didn't you?
Yes, and that's actually what's brought a lot of the guests in that we've had from overseas is people that I met when I was traveling right before the pandemic. You remember we interviewed Ole Sal, who was off the coast of Portugal, who had gotten stranded, basically couldn't come into a safe harbor, and there were all of those boats. There were 200 that were just in through the Mediterranean and the Caribbean who couldn't come home because of the pandemic. And we had several several interviews with Ole while he was trying to get governments to open up or make some place for them to come so they could be protected from the elements and have a place to land.
We also had in studio, I think it was right before the pandemic, we had a U.S. admiral.
Yes.
And that was kind of cool to talk to him as well, being that my dad was a Navy officer and served on the admiral staff in the Pacific Fleet. So that was kind of cool to talk a little shop with him.
Right. That was Admiral John Bidoff, and retired in the U.S. Navy. But what a guy. He's a great speaker too. He's been doing a lot of speaking in private clubs around the area, and you know, met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He's still actively involved in doing things, even though he's retired. Just as a speaker, and so it was a privilege to have him come on the show.
I think I've learned a lot. Obviously, I'm a neophyte, but I've learned a lot about yachts and racing and some of the rules just through doing these shows and through osmosis of listening to you and the guests as well. And then, of course, some of the great regattas. And it's one thing to think about some East or West Coast jaunt, but I remember the one about Malta and some of these other places. I mean, we really went around the world with some of these guests.
Right. We had the Podesta family, and Christoph Podesta came on the show twice. When I was in Malta in October, I was there at the Royal Malta Yacht Club Rolex Middle Sea race and saw the Podesta family win that race and actually stepped aboard their boat and interviewed them on board their boat, the family. And then we later had a conversation with you and I and Christoph, I think, when I was in Barcelona, and Christoph was in of course Malta, and you were in San Francisco. But then he won the race again, and so we brought him back on the show, and it was fun because he was interviewing, and I could hear his kids in the background because he was interviewing from home, because everybody was, either on their boat or at home in Malta too.
That's right. And so after nearly 100 shows, are you starting to get a little cachet? Like, do people think of you as the Barbara Walters of Salesport now?
I wouldn't be so presumptuous. No.
All right, but you're getting a little heat, right?
The Los Angeles Yacht Club invited me to help them with their speaker series, and there's little things, little perks here and there. I certainly can walk into any yacht club and be welcomed, whether I have reciprocal privileges or not. And that's helpful, because then, there's an opportunity to tell more stories, which is what our listeners want to hear.
Now, just for fun, was there a guest this last year who maybe wasn't that great? They were all winners. But this is the thing I ask comedians, which was your worst venue?
Yeah. Well, I think perhaps sometimes there's an important story to tell, but maybe it's more technical. I think when we did the ocean cleanup, such an important cause, that perhaps the entertainment value might not have been as significant for our listeners, but it was really great to know about all of those efforts all around the world, that where people pay attention to the trash and the cleanup on the shores, that come in from the ocean, because we love our oceans.
Fair enough, that's an honest answer. But I mean, is that true? People say that there's a mass of plastic bottles the size of Texas floating around in the Pacific Ocean.
Yes.
What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, that's really a result of the currents, bringing everything together in that little vortex of because anything you put in the water, it goes somewhere, it just doesn't disappear if it's plastic. And so, yeah, and usually if it ends up on a shore, then people can clean it up. But if it stays in the ocean, I mean, the oceans are pretty vast. Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I just said I heard the next thing. We used to worry about straws and turtles. The next thing are these disposable masks by the millions in our ocean.
Yeah. Anything that we do as humans, we have to pay attention to what happens after we stop using it. You know, and I also, I must say, another guest that I have really appreciated getting to know is Captain Kurt Bulger of the BAP Union. And you didn't have a chance to meet him because I interviewed him on a day that you were not there. But that was the big Peruvian tall ship that came into the bay that was about 380 feet long with four masts that was right outside. I'm sure you saw it when you were coming across the bridge to your broadcast. But he, you know, that was kind of a pivotal thing, was talking to him in Peru in March and finding out about how the ship was converted to housing and feeding the first responders in Peru when the pandemic first broke out. And so that was one, because that ship was going all around the world. It had an itinerary of visiting many different ports. It had already been, you know, on several continents, and then it had to go home. And so many ships did have to go home. But then,
well, I'll tell you what, as we wrap it up, Karen, there are a lot of, you know, a lot of shows that are just cookie cutter shows. This one is unique. There's nothing like it, and you found your niche. So congratulations on 2020, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. I'm Rick Tittle. Come on back. The lines are open at 1-800-878-PLAY.